Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the Washington Commanders. And in this instance, it really is a sad day of remembrance because, as you all know, President, we still can't believe he got elected again, has said he will use his leverage to coerce the Commanders to revert to their former name in order to secure a stadium deal in the District of Columbia. He even derisively called them the Washington Whatevers, as if it's beneath him to honor them with their actual name. And although we'd like to think the team will resist this pressure, it's been our tragic experience that whatever What's-His-Name wants, What's-His-Name gets. So we are resigned in advance to having to watch the Washington R-Skins, we obviously aren't going to say that horrible racial slur that rhymes with bedskins, playing football on Sunday. And yes, even though a 90% super-duper majority of indigenous people surveyed consistently said they were not offended by the name Rouge Skins, everything's less offensive when you say it in French, this does not matter. The sixth rule of wokeness clearly tells us that only the wounds of the offended matter, even if the wounded are a minority of the minority being wounded. So if 10% are incensed, that's the key fact. The hurtfulness of the handful or even the single aggrieved one always matters more than the indifference of the masses. That's literally why we call it being woke, because it doesn't happen to everybody. Only the few special, privileged insiders are hypersensitive enough to have had the epiphany of race, gender, and sexuality awareness enhancement that our order depends on. Now, yes, it's true. We don't really love the name Commanders either, since it obviously implies a superior-inferior relationship or hierarchical power structure where one person is issuing commands and another person is obeying them. We, of course, believe in communal, collective, consensus-based decision-making, or what we like to call the triple C structure of golden government based on mutual love, respect, and gentle caressing. But still, Commanders is so much better than calling them the Washington Purple without the Blueskins. One other note. Since we're talking about this, President Whatever has also said he wants baseball's Cleveland Guardians to change their team name back to the I-Blankians. In fact, his favorite pastime appears to be ripping off the cosmetic labeling of wokeism and reverting names to their former inglory, whether it's mountains or military bases or professional sports teams. Also, we don't know whether he intends to resurrect that horrific, grinning, red-faced caricature Chief Wahoo as well, but we can only assume that goes with the package, and calling them the Cleveland Otherwordians will certainly bring many ignominies with it, Mr. President. I stands for Indigenous peoples, not that other term. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Second, we received truly sad news this week that one of our very most favorite thought leaders, Stephen Colbert, has lost his job telling America what to think on CBS's Late Show.
Before we start the show, I want to let you know something that I found out just last night. Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. And
yes, I know it's depressing for us to find this out so suddenly when we have a mere 10 months left to grieve the loss of our hero, the man whose audience share was the highest in his time slot and 50% better than Jimmy Kimmel's. But it gets worse.
It's not just the end of our show, but it's the end of The Late Show on CBS. I'm not being replaced. This is all just going away.
So not only are we losing our beloved Captain Anti-America, but CBS isn't even going to be producing a talk show in that time anymore. They're essentially abandoning the slot to something else, the nature of which we can't even speculate upon at this point. But rest assured, it won't be the reliable propagator of sturdy anti-republicanism that it is now, for shame. Now, yes, it's true, the show costs about $100 million a year to make, employing 200 people, but losing $40 million a year. But $40 million is a small price to pay for saving America from the forces of MAGA, isn't it? Does this mean we can no longer depend on the financially self-destructive but politically reliable support of one of our big four broadcast networks? How can we be competitive in next year's midterms if the unified front of broadcast television starts to crumble? And yes, although we do cherish our dear Stephen, it does trouble us no small amount to realize that he apparently did not offer up any of his own $15 million salary to save the show. It certainly is nice of him to lament the loss of 200 jobs, but He would have been a better comrade if he had reduced his own salary to a still lavish, say, $1 million to offset the losses and perhaps rescue his fellow members of the proletariat from their occupational doom. And yes, we know some of our enemies will seize on this fact as evidence that socialists are never really serious about their commitment to equality. But to this, we simply refer you to the approved 47th edition of Rules for Socialists 25B subsection 15. All economic rules apply only to the ordinary folk, and never to the leaders who make the financial dreams of those folk come true. So now we will be left with only one champion at night, Jimmy Kimmel, plus once a week Jon Stewart on Comedy Central, and all the network news, and CNN, and MSNBC, and the newspapers, and the universities, and the musicians, and the filmmakers, and the tech companies, and the unions. Well, still, we hate to lose even one of our most cherished apostles. We certainly hope he's not the coal bear in the coal mine. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we are so happy to award this week's holy and anointed garland of rainbow equality to the fine engineers at Mercedes-Benz for the pioneering work on their next-generation electric sports car, the C590. Now, obviously, we love the fact that the upper levels of race car enthusiasm are finally being conquered by electric motors. But that's not the real reason we love this car so much. You see, the key distinguishing feature of the C590 isn't its high-performance, no-combustion engine. It's the advanced external speaker system that make it sound like a Mercedes V8 engine. That's right. Realizing that speed freaks raised to love their planet-killing, gas-guzzling, rumble-inducing sports cars would only be enticed away by something that sounded like speed, Mercedes has given them what they want. And why not? This is no different than making plant-based imitation meat bean curd patties look and taste like actual hamburgers, or pummeling and shaping flax and chia seeds to seem like eggs, or using LEDs instead of, you know, actual light bulbs. In fact, although this has not been engineered yet, we look forward to a future where drivers can select different sounds and feel depending on their mood for the day or the moment. There's no reason any car has to have just one sound. Why not let the C590 switch between sounding like the old Mercedes AMG GT, the AMG C63, or the AMG W204, as you desire, perhaps even emulating the distinctive noise of other manufacturers entirely? If engine revving is going to be fake, why not let it be that of a Ferrari or a Porsche or a Lamborghini or even an F1? The possibilities are theoretically endless. But other than the novelty and fun, do you not see, dear Otherin, why this is such a beautiful innovation? It means that yet another class of things has shed the burden of being binary. This means that the future of Mercedes and perhaps all cars is trans-propulsional. This goes way beyond the awkward half-breed hybrids like the Toyota Prius or the Ford Fusion. No! We finally have truly trans-engineal vehicles, or TEVs for short. No longer must a sports car be limited to its locomotion assigned at birth. Finally, vehicles manufactured electric can identify as internal combustion. The C590 has innards without pistons and spark plugs, but now it can sound like a turbo diesel because it identifies as a V8. And if sports cars can be trans, in fact, if the entire line of Mercedes can be trans AMGs, then anything goes. And what could be more inclusive than an EV on the inside pretended to be a muscle car on the outside, even sounding like the complicated tranny that it doesn't even have? So beautiful. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.